Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin' on Lending. It's August 2nd. Can you guys believe it? What is happening to this year? My goodness. Well, some would say, where you been, Dave? Well, I had to take a trip, a little journey last week to my dad's passed away, and it was a tough thing but to go, but he was 87, ready to go. And many of you knew about this, and I want to say a special thank you to so many of you who sent notes and emails to me with condolences. I want to say thank you very, very much. But as he said, life goes on and the show must go on. And we're here live from Austin, Texas, when we're going to be talking today later on in the broadcast about originators. Is your strategy need to change and be adjusted in light of FINRA and all the financial regulations that are coming at us? We're going to talk about that. We've got a special guest with us today, Ryan from Loan Sifter, and we are going to get into it a great deal. But first, as we do each and every week, we get an update on interest rates. And Joe Farr, who normally does that, is out in California at a Lenders One conference. And so, folks, you're going to get me to give you, I'm giving the market update. So, Joe, I'm sure you'd do a much better job than I would of this, but here goes. The market update. Today, mortgage banking or MBS prices are down for 30 seconds. The MBS prices move lower as stocks reacted favorably to strong earnings. That's kind of an interesting thing. And both that happened as a result of both foreign and domestic companies. So, seems to be some strengthening in earnings. We'll see how long that lasts. The Dow is up 170 points today. That's a good thing for the equities, those who invest in the equities. Both construction spending and IMS and the IMS index came in a little better than expected. So we're watching the reaction today as MBS prices fall a bit. And so It was last week that I missed so much of the week, but it was another good week for mortgages. Interest rates were low again. Another new low was achieved during the week. And this is a result of economic data generally supporting the belief that the economy is growing, but at a fairly slow pace. So there's no major information that came out last week. Second quarter GDP was 2.4%. Below the expected 2.5% and below the first quarter GDP number of 2.7%. So as a result of those lackluster GDP numbers, the market had a pretty good week. Also, durable good orders were much lower than expected. That's a big number for us to watch. And the Treasury auctions were mixed. The 2- and 5-year auctions went well, but the 7-year auction was weak. And again, all of that contributed last week being driving rates lower to new lows, if I understand correctly from looking at MBS quote lines notes. What do we got this week? Well, this week we've got non-farm payroll numbers coming out on Friday. Current estimate is for a job loss of 90,000 jobs are anticipated to be lost. We'll have to pay a big attention to that number. That could be a market mover, folks. Again, interest rates are at the lowest, so if it comes off of that, it's going to could have drive rates lower. I'd love to have Joe here and get his commentary on that. Maybe Andy can jump in and give us his thoughts on that later on in the program. But it is estimated that the job loss will be 90,000 jobs. Let's pay attention to that number and see where it comes in on Friday. The private sector is expected to create 80,000 jobs, so the government is expected to lose about 170,000 jobs, mostly census workers. So that's how we got to the number of 90,000 job loss. So again, it's positive that the private sector is creating 80,000 jobs and kind of getting lost in the fact that 170,000 jobs of the census workers is going away. So let's pay attention to those numbers as we get toward the end of the week. Another indicator for this is pending home sales for June. It comes out tomorrow. Another drop is expected in June, but not the huge 30% drop that we saw in May, followed by April at the end of the home, which was the end of the home buyer tax credit. I thought I heard, was that you, Alice, jumping in on this?
Well, I hope she doesn't sound like me.
Oh, that was you, Andy. I'm so sorry. I got to turn my speakers off.
I got to be really, really loud. Yeah, I just wanted to say something about the census workers and that there are going to be fewer census workers and moving into the private sector, and that is a really good thing. There's certainly some important data that's captured on that census, but I got to tell you, I got called by a census worker three different times. I turned in my census. They called me up and said, it says here you have three kids. Is that correct? And I go, yes. Well, do all of your three kids live at home? Well, yes. Are you sure that's right? Yes. Do any of your kids get other income? Well, they work. But they kept going over and over and over. It was a complete waste of time. It was just a way to spend money on the census workers, and I'm glad they're going into the private sector.
That's good to have them back in the private sector. I hope the private sector will work for them. You know, that's why, like one guy said, you know why they call them census worker? Because that's about all that whole thing is worth, is just pure census. So anyway, folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin' on Lending. And stay tuned for the whole program. We've got a very important segment talking about the broker-to-banker conversions that are going on and being considered by so many. We have a special guest, and it's going to be a great segment. Driving a lot of that is FINREG. Financial regulations, financial reform. Alice Alvey, so good to have you with us on the program. I know you're at a conference, and so your involvement today may be somewhat minimal. You and Joe are at conferences. At least we got you dialing in. Thank you so much. Give us an update. What's going on the traffic report?
Well, thanks, Dave. I'm glad to be here. Yes, I am out at the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Conference at Soaring Eagle Casino in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, right slap bang in the middle of the Lower Peninsula. So we've got beautiful weather up here, so we're happy. Right now, I guess I want to make sure everybody's aware of the final rule that was published July 28th for originator licensing, or I should say registration, originator registration for financial institutions. So this rule is out. Implementation, I'm still trying to get to the bottom of some of this. I'm hearing, you know, conflicting information on exactly when this is going to be put into place. We're seeing 180 days, and then within this rule are parts for each one of the different entities, for NCUA, for FDIC, and so forth. So we'll be monitoring that, and I'll get back with you on the implementation date a little bit more next week once we get some clarification. But the bottom line is that loan originators, just as defined for the SAFE Act, if you're a loan originator at a bank, credit union, even the Farm Credit Administration system, you will need to get registered. Now, all that means essentially is you're going to be going into the National Mortgage Licensing System, which isn't quite set up yet, so part of this is going to be driven by when NMLS can handle the registrations. Assuming they can handle that in the time frame required per this rule, then you'll all go ahead and get yourself registered, and you will have a fingerprint background check requirement. What I've been diving through here and not able to get to the bottom of is exactly then what has to be in the background check. That's going to be set more by your regulator in terms of you know, how clean your history has to be. So it really applies across the board. So those of you who might be part of a CUSO, credit union service organization, those originators also will now have to be registered. So a little bit of a leveling of the playing field. There's no education requirements either for pre-education or Con Ed within this regulation, but certainly bank regulators look to that, you know, bank employees and credit union employees follow that. So that was the one thing that did happen over the last week. The other thing I want to give everybody a heads up on is FHA's proposed rule, the Risk Management Initiative. This was published July 15th. It is going to change seller concessions. And we found in the fine print, in the proposed rule, FHA is trying to change, I don't know if it's intentional or not, the definition of a third party. Who is an interested third party? We have all along said it's the seller, realtor, the most they can contribute to the transaction, 6% of the sale price. Well, in this proposed rule, it defines in the fine print at the bottom of the page, one of the pages, that third party would include lender contributions. I really stress to everybody, you've got to get out there, comment on this proposed rule, and make sure you put in your voice that you cannot include lender contributions in that limitation. I mean, Dave, think about the change in transactions just by dropping seller concessions, let alone now the first time a limitation on lender contributions. So
that could be significant. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a big piece. No one knows if it was intentional other than HUD. We just wanted to make sure that let's call it a typo. Hey, you didn't really need to do this, right? Just go ahead and take it out. So let's take that approach, and maybe it'll go away. This proposed rule is going to put in place minimum credit scores of 580, which as an industry, we're all kind of saying, well, that's okay. You know, we can live with a lot of the parts of this regulation or proposed regulation. By the way, and no one looks at this as something that's going to go away. We do see this proposed rule is going to move fast. You have till August 16th to comment. So it's going to set manual underwriting standards, which, again, when you look through the list and you say, okay, manual underwrite, I've got to follow ratios of 31-43, I can do that. You know, these are reasonable guidelines that a lot of lenders are following already. But please, I have to stress, everybody, please go check that out and make sure you give your comment on that. We are trying to say 3% is too low. I really think it makes sense in the market to have seller contributions more at 4%. So any of you who can submit data about what does it take for the seller to just pay the closing costs, not excess contributions, but closing costs, reasonable closing costs on the deal, so that we don't lose, you know, some of the momentum that's gone on in the markets and the recovery. So we're all still watching the Dodd-Frank reform get put into place to move on to the next bill. I'm sure we'll have more shows on that as we move forward. But everybody's watching right now what's going to happen with the Home Valuation Code of Conduct and the potential changes there, since essentially it's a part of this regulation that's been put on hold. But Fannie and Freddie haven't expressed their voice on yet. Other bills we're watching, we are watching still bouncing around within budget appropriations and so forth. No new money yet for rural development or rural housing services. So we're still watching H.R. 4899 and Senate Bill 3266 to see if we can get some new money for rural housing, but not yet. So that's my main report for now. Those are the big traffic items, and we'll have more for you next week.
Certainly a lot moving down the line. Hey, Alice, you're at a conference. You attend a lot of conferences. What's the feeling out there as you're talking to people and talking to the attendees of these conferences? First of all, are the conferences you're attending, are they well attended? Is one question I know a lot of listeners are wondering.
We are very happy. Our attendance is way up this year compared to the last couple of years. You know, you've reached a point, I think, in the market where people go, still here, right? I'm still here. And, so it's definitely the group of diehards that now really want to get together and really communicate. We're talking about all different types of fronts, especially market conditions. We're very interested in the real estate trends, especially here in Michigan. We are looking at them all around the country and really seeing pockets of stabilization, and that's an important thing to monitor. It means a lot, too, in our underwriting risk. There is also a lot of talk about the qualified mortgage, you know, qualified residential mortgage. What does that really mean, and how in underwriting are we going to, you know, try and monitor that? Once we get more information, we're going to have to try and figure out what that means and monitor it.
That's interesting. Are you getting the feeling that the loan officers and the people attending this conference are aware of all that's going down the legislative highway?
You know, they really are, more so than ever before. I see people, you know, really being interested in this, especially since so much of it touches loan officer compensation. And managers really just trying to watch the real estate trends in all their markets so they can make sure they're getting their share of business. One of the interesting things is, you know, first-time home buyers making up, you know, good 50% of the market. And, you know, originators really need to be educated to know how to capture and make that market work for them.
Boy, the guys that lived on that old refinance saying, no, refinances will always be here, are wishing they had spent the time maybe in a couple of your seminars and talked to us, because we do a lot of consulting in that area of origination strategies. Alice, thank you so much for taking a break from the conference you're at to joining us. Are you going to be able to stay on the call, or are you going to have to run back to the conference?
No, I'm excited to hear the next segment and talk about that, you know, the change, because we see that a lot with our customers that move up to lender or even bigger lender, right? I'm dabbling in warehouse lines, but I want to be a bigger long-term player in that market. So I'm very interested in the next segment.
Good, good. Well, we're going to move on to the Profit Doctor after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Lickin, and back by, man, I mean, we are getting so much feedback on the Profit Doctor segment. We have again with us today, as we will each and every program, Andy Schell from MBS, and we're focusing on the B2B transition. Let's talk about raising capital. Andy, how can a new mortgage bank raise capital?
Well, thanks, Dave. Boy, it's great to be on the show again. Let's make sure we understand what we're talking about when we say capital. So first off, let's get our definition straight. So capital or equity or owner's equity or net worth, those all mean the same thing, and that's the financial foundation that drives growth potential. It's the how much the owner has invested in the company. And this is a really, really important number. Net worth is what correspondent investors look at, and it's what warehouse line lenders look at to determine if they're going to work with you at all and how much money they're going to lend to you. So it's always better to have more net worth than it is to have less net worth. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good
also
thing.
Also really important to be profitable. That's a really, really essential element. So you can raise capital by getting another individual to invest into your company. And they actually, when I say invest, they actually are going to put some of their money into your company, so your capital base, your net worth actually goes up. And when they do this, when they put their money into your company, their capital is then at risk. Now, this jumps back to a financial principle we talked about in an earlier show, and that's about risk versus return. The bigger the risk, the bigger the
return.
Right? So stock market has bigger returns than buying a CD at a bank. So investors, if you go to an investor and say, hey, invest in my company, well, investors are going to expect to receive both a predicted return, and they want to see how that return is going to play out. They're going to see detail. They're going to want to see what's called an internal rate of return based on cash flows.
That's right.
And how you calculate that is pretty complicated. But the good news is there's a lot of money out there.
I think that is good news.
You were talking to a hedge fund that was talking about billions of dollars on the sideline.
Right.
So we know there's a lot of money out there, people who want to invest in a mortgage bank because it's a great opportunity. But it's just like going in to borrow money from a bank, or, you know, if you're, I've got teenagers, and, you know, the first time you call the girl up, you get one chance to make a good first impression.
Yes.
You know, it's the same thing with raising money. If you go to an investor that's got, you know, millions of or even billions of dollars, and you go in there with your napkin or your legal pad, and you marked out some numbers, and you think, well, maybe it'll be this or maybe it'll be that, but I don't really know. You know what? That is DOA. You don't even go there.
Dead on arrival.
Yeah, it's dead on arrival. Do not go to ask an investor for money unless you've got a good, well put together presentation. Now, you know, in our firm, we've helped companies raise capital on Wall Street with an IPO for an exit strategy, or we've helped companies raise money from insiders using what we call leverage capital. And we can go into detail of that some other time. But it's essential. Oh, man, it is so important. You've got to have a really good presentation, very, 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 very well-structured presentation, so the investor can see what their internal rate of return is going to be on cash flow. And you got to remember, the investor is going to want to get their money out in 3 to 5 years, so you have to have an exit strategy. Now, the caveat of all this is you got to do it right the first time. It's pretty complicated. There's a lot of money out there. People are looking to invest. So if you don't have a strong CFO on board, a CFO who's a CPA who really understands this stuff, we can help. We've done this a lot. Or your CPA firm can help put together some financial presentations. But there is money out there to invest.
You know what, Andy? What's so amazing is this reminds me of this is a little off script a bit, but it reminds me of the Budweiser commercial a number of years ago, and it was this. I don't know if you guys remember it, but it was called Bimbleman Beer, and they were saying, "Well, we need to sell our beer. Well, what's the strong points of our beer?" And they were trying to come up with an ad, and it reminds me of this. And they go, "Well, it's because does it taste good? Well, no, actually, our beer doesn't taste as good as the script went on that beer commercial." And they say, "Well, what can we say about it? I mean, well, it doesn't taste as good. It's more expensive than Budweiser. Well, what can we say?" And it's because, and then the end of the commercial that they're doing here is saying, "Well, it's maybe," and they put in a jingle and said, "Well, it's really because we just need the money." Folks, if you go out and are trying to raise capital just because you need the money, but it was buy our beer because we really need the money. It was hilarious. And it really comes to the point of right here, make a good and fresh impression. But, you know, you've talked about the fact that there is capital. We're going to talk more about it in the next segment. But, Andy, how much capital should someone go out and get?
Well, you know, the easy answer is always more. No matter how much.
More is better.
You're going to want more. Well, let's think about this. To be in mortgage banking, I'll just throw out a number. And we in our firm, we've talked about this. I think, Dave, you've kind of thrown it out. 2.5 is kind of the minimum. And I'm gonna stick to 3 because that gives you a little bit more breathing room. But I'm going to say you need to get to $3 million in total capital. So today, if you're at $1 million, you need to go get $2 million. If you're at $1 million, if you're at $500,000 today, you need to go get $2.5 million. And there's some sources that our firm is connected with that may be able to help support that, but that's maybe for another conversation. But I really think that you need to get to 3. But that's not to say, I don't want anybody misunderstanding here, I think that the $1 million net worth mortgage company is going to be able to make money. It'll just be smaller multiples, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But they're going to be able to make money with $1 million. You can get a HUD full legal, you can close loans, government loans in your name, and you're going to be able to be okay. Even smaller than that, $500,000. If you're doing the agency sponsorship, you can still get government loans, but you can't close it in your name. You can still do conventionals in your name. You could probably get a warehouse line, although it's going to be not favorable terms. So it's possible to still operate maybe down to $500,000. Less than that, I don't know, Dave. It gets
a little fuzzy.
Yeah, you know, it's just a little fuzzy. I remember back in the day, you know, $200,000 to $250,000 in capital, you'd be fine. But I really think that's a bigger number now today. But I want to talk about the dynamics of the money just a second. Because if you can get to $1 million, and then if you can get to $3 million, there is, in mortgage banking circles, there is several steps. And they're not necessarily completely, well, some of them are in steps. Like getting into hedging is a step. But let me hit on this just real quickly. If you're a mortgage company with $1 million in net worth, you're probably making about 20 basis points on volume or so, something like that. You get up to $3 million in net worth, we see companies that are hitting 60 basis points on volume or even more. So when you tie that back to dollars, that million-dollar net worth company is probably making about $320,000 a year or so. That $3 million net worth company is making $2.5 million. It's almost 10 times more. And the reason is, I'll hit on the reasons just here a little bit. If you're at the million-dollar net worth company, you're probably in the low-tier best efforts pricing, so you're not able to get into pipeline hedging with AOTs. By doing just that, you're adding probably 30 basis points alone, just being able to do that. But you can't do it in $1 million. You got to be bigger than that. And then by being at the $3 million, you get better warehouse line costs, lower warehouse costs. You get higher multiples from your warehouse line borrower. Your lender will lend you more money if you have a higher net worth. You get operational savings per loan, technology efficiencies, and the profits just start climbing and climbing. But the magic number, I think, is about $3 million. And so it's possible to get private investors to bring in money. And with these kind of returns, if you could go from $1 million making $250,000 to $3 million, so you go to an investor and you say, invest $2 million in my business, let me show you how much money I can pay you for that. And you can probably pay him $1 million because your profit's going to go from $300,000 to $2 million. So you're going to be able to pay a really strong return. The calculations need to be very precise, and it gets complicated. But the bottom line of it is this is why you can raise money in mortgage banking, because the return to the investor can be significant, and the owner of the mortgage company is still going to be able to keep a substantial portion, much more than they would have otherwise. And so it's a great opportunity, but the complexity of the company increases substantially when you do all this.
Yeah.
So get help. Don't just try to go out and raise a bunch of money and operate your business as you have been, because you can't do that. You've got to be much more focused on operational efficiencies.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, the complexities is something we could spend and probably will spend some more time talking about in the next segment. Andy, what do you see as the key to the future of a successful company?
Well, I'll hit this really fast, Dave. I know we're running short on time when we want to get over to hear what Ryan has to say about the broker-to-banker conversions. You know, what I'm seeing is that there's an evolution happening in mortgage banking. And if you look at the successful companies, they are very well-balanced. And they're well-balanced in the conflict that happens between production and operations. You always have this conflict, and in the past, production almost always wins. But I can tell you from experience, if you have a production-focused organization that only focuses on production, there's going to be losses that are going to happen. You've got to have the balance. On the converse,
yes,
if you have a company that only focuses on the operations, you're probably not going to make enough money because you're not going to have enough volume. So it takes a pairing. It's symbiotic. It has to be together, working together to make it all work right. So part of that also means you got to have good financials. You got to have a really strong technology platform, like our guest on the show today with LoanSifter. You've got to be able to control the risk. That means all the way down into the branches, strong
yep.
compliance, strong quality control, strong training. You've got to work with firms that can help make sure your originators, all the way through processing and closing, understand their job really, really well. Don't just focus on production. Focus on the whole part.
Holistic approach, yes.
Yep, exactly. Strong companies have a strong head of production and a strong CFO and a strong operations manager. So you need that skill set match. Now, if you can't afford to go find those people, and don't just hire anybody, hire somebody good, but if you can't afford to hire all those people, consider an outsourced resource to help with that. There, you can work with companies that provide C-level support, and ours happens to be one of them. So now's the time to be proactive to address this growth, these regulatory changes, capitalization requirements. All the operational challenges that we're going to be facing as an industry can be overcome. Dave, I've heard you say this many, many times. There's going to be more money made in the next 5 years than in the past 25 years among those that are the survivors in the industry.
Yes.
And I believe that, and I know it's true, and I think people can make it happen if they'll just listen to what we're saying here and move forward.
It is so important, Andy, that you know they have a holistic and a good balance. We're going to get into a lot more of that discussion. And thank you so much, Profit Doctor, for bringing it to us each and every week. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path
path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Lickin with Lickin on Lending. And again, it is August 2nd, and we're talking about a very important transition that many are considering as they look at financial regulation. Alice has been talking about this, folks, for, you know, it seems like for months and months and months. It's coming. It's like this. It's like sitting on the Gulf Coast and either anticipating an oil slick, or they used to only anticipate hurricanes. Now they anticipate oil slicks. The reality is it's coming, and we've been saying it and saying it, and now it is here. And I my phone is ringing off the hook on the – and our phone at our firm is with people wondering, Dave, you've been saying it, but you know I just didn't believe it. And now it's here. What do we need to do? And we're going to talk about that today. And we've got a special guest with us from Loan Sifter, which is a technology company. We're going to talk about their technology in a minute. But Ryan, thank you so much for being with us and being a part of the program today. Welcome.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be part of the program and happy to be on.
Well, we're glad to have you here. By the way, folks, we just had an article published by one of our associates, Lindsay Bridges, who's director of business development for our firm. By the way, Andy made comment to the fact that there's other competitors that are out there. You don't really want to talk to anybody else. Talk to us. That is just an unabashed comment. But anyway, I say that because I do have some friendly competitors, most of which we're very good friends with out there. We welcome all even our competitors to listen to this program. But Lindsay, as a director of business development, published an article that was really interesting, Ryan, called Avoid Analysis Paralysis. There's so many people that have been going, should I not? And I know you're in the market out there and have been getting a lot of feedback or a lot of comments. What are you hearing from mortgage brokers and originators as a result of the current legislation?
You know, boy, Dave, that is a great question. You know, as we're out and about talking to these mortgage bankers, these emerging bankers, and even brokers that are considering becoming bankers, you know, they're kind of watching this legislation. They're wondering what to do. And, of course, with any new law, you've got, you know, especially as large as this one is, you've got a little nervousness in everyone. But I think for the most part, they really do understand that there's going to be a big change in the market, a big change within the industry, and a lot of them are looking to go to make that transition at this point if they're able to and financially in that position. And if those that aren't, they're taking a heavy look at things like you mentioned in your segment before that. So, you know, it's definitely something that's on everyone's mind.
Well, Ryan, this is Andy. It's great to have you on the call on the show today. In thinking through all of this, we know the legislation is happening. It's happened. And there's going to be caps on loan officer and broker compensation. That's happened. It's just a matter of when it's fully into effect. The only way to make increased upside is to have access to that gain on sale. So as you're out there talking to the folks in the industry that you work with, the originators, how has this current legislation increased their desire? Or has the legislation increased their desire for them to make that transition from broker to banker, or is it too soon to tell?
You know, that's a really, really good question, because I think on some of the people that we're talking to, they're just kind of playing a wait-and-see type attitude of maybe it's too soon to tell. Let's see what's going to happen for a couple of months in the market, you know, see where this actually goes. I think for most people, the majority, they're, you know, those that are serious about, you know, staying in business and really playing a significant role and having a very solid company, they are making and really actively looking at that particular transition. I talked to a company just last week. They were in the process of making that. They had probably started the process about a month ago. Ever since, they thought that and kind of felt like that legislation would be passed. So I think that the shift is definitely there. I think that people are getting serious about making this transition from broker to banker.
You know what, Ryan, we're seeing a lot of folks trying to make that transition, And a number of them are struggling in the transition from broker to banker. What are you seeing, or what are you hearing about some of the challenges that they're facing? I'm sure misery loves company. So what is some of the misery that they're going through?
No, you're absolutely right. You know, there's some big challenges for these guys. I mean, one of the biggest challenges that we see being a technology firm is technology. They go from using a basic loan origination system to now all of a sudden having to figure out, you know, how do they manage a central lock desk, and where do they use that technology? Should they use that technology? Some of these individuals have only done things manually, and so they realize that to manage this whole process is really, really a complex thing. And so what we're seeing specifically with technology, the two biggest ones that I've kind of seen is really understanding, you know, from their brokers all the way through secondary and what that means and how they're going to utilize technology in this particular industry and in this environment.
I find that's interesting. You mentioned in selecting technology is a big challenge. What type of technology decisions seem to be the most difficult?
You know, Dave, I think that the two biggest challenges that we're seeing is first and foremost is the loan origination system, knowing how they're going to utilize that loan origination system. And then, of course, the second thing that we're seeing is product and pricing and underwriting systems and how those two systems can work together. Workflow seems to play a big part of that. When you consider that you've got an entire process now that you've got to manage, you need a good database of record, which can be your loan origination system. And then, of course, you need your product and pricing system, because product and pricing plays a good role. And then you get into even some of these banking systems. One of the ones that we work real closely with is DataTrack, for example. You know, this is new to
one of our sponsors. I'm proud to have them as a sponsor.
Sure. Yeah, these are brand new, you know, choices and decisions that some of these guys have never heard about, and so that's where it brings up the challenge.
That is really important.
Well, Ryan, you talked earlier about centralized lock desk or not, and obviously if you're going to become a mortgage banker and move into secondary marketing and hedging, you've got to have a centralized lock desk. And so you probably see every permutation of workflow there is out there. So talk a little bit more about the importance of workflow and how that affects the technology selection that these companies are looking at.
Really good question. You know, as far as workflow, when we talk about workflow, we're talking specifically about an organization, how this organization is set up, how they're functioning, what they're trying to accomplish. And so when we specifically talk about workflow and technology, what we're trying to do is understand the company and what's being, you know, what they're trying to accomplish and how technology and these pieces are going to fit in. And I'll give you a great example. For example, at LoanSifter, we offer the opportunity to allow an emerging banker to not have to make that transition all at once, but we allow them through our centralized lock desk the ability to kind of move into that slowly or in stages, so they can both continue to offer their wholesale rates and their wholesale lenders, but at the same time try to, you know, begin to merge those correspondent lenders into the mix, and then eventually go through these various stages. And so workflow plays a big part, and that is also a big question for a lot of these companies and how that's going to fit with each technology. And each company is different. Each one has different needs. We try to match the right technology, and, of course, we've got, you know, technology partners with those particular individual companies.
Well, that's great, you know, right?
Go ahead, Andy.
Having the ability to have that transition be managed smoothly, where they can still broker and bank at the same time, is a great feature. One of the things we talk about sometimes on the Profit Doctor segment is we talk about operational efficiencies, and what drives operational efficiencies is technology. I mean, without a solid technology backbone underneath the company, it could actually make it worse. You'd almost be better off with some systems to have a scratch pad, because it's so disjointed and so difficult to use. And we sometimes also see the other problem that comes up is people will you'll have the tail wagging the dog. You'll have a company that has a process that they follow when they buy a new technology, and the technologist lands on it, steps on it, and is not able to be designed to support their workflow. So it's great to hear that with your system there's some flexibility. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good point. That is accurate. I run into companies all the time that have purchased different technology solutions that, quite frankly, are great solutions, but they simply don't work within the company. And not only is that expensive to implement, obviously, and to purchase, but at the end of the day, they would be better off not to have a technology solution at all. So you have to kind of play it. It's not an easy thing. It's not like just something that you take out of the box and put in there and it works. I mean, you know, these are decisions, and companies like, you know, consulting firms like yourself, that's why you can help them, is help them direct them in the right direction. I mean, it's not, everything doesn't just fit into one place.
You know, that is such a good point. We see that even with accounting systems, where people go, well, I just got a really good accounting system. And I go, yeah, but you know how to operate it? Do you have the chart account set up properly? Are you doing anything there what is the foundation you're putting that technology on? It's always a combination, Ryan, of the carbon-based systems, us humans, and the silicone-based systems, are the computers and the automation, the technology we use. Andy, we've seen this in the accounting area so much. What are some of the areas on the accounting side, Andy, that our listeners need to pay attention to, those that are making that transition?
Well, it's about data. Accounting is all about counting. It's how much did you make? So you count all of the money that came in, and you count all the expenses that you incurred making the loan, and then you subtract the two, and that's how much you made. Well, but you've got one system that's got the preliminary till or the GFE, and then you've got another system that has the almost final HUD one, but it's going to go to closing, but it gets changed again once it gets to closing, and when it comes back, nobody updates the system, so it goes into another group, and maybe now it's a manual system. So what loan fee did you charge that customer? Well, you've got you have three different versions of the fees, because you got the GFE and the preliminary HUD one and the final, and then, well, what costs were associated with it? Did you have a credit report pulled, and did you have a DULP pull, and how were those costs allocated back, and were they, and was the commission on that loan put into the loan calculation, and all that relates to, you got to have a system that can integrate and pull data, or at least system doesn't always have to be just computers, but if computers are working right, computers work, I mean, phenomenally faster than people do, but computers can't necessarily tell if the apple's rotten. You got to have eyes, too, that are looking to make certain that things are smoothly moving through the systems.
Garbage in, garbage out, as the old expression has. I don't. You got the best system out there, folks. You're going to be in trouble. Folks, we've got Ryan with Loan Sifter as a special guest. We're talking about broker-to-banker transitions. We're going to be right back after this brief word.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken, the Licken on Lending. We've got Ryan from Loan Sifter as a guest, and we got Alice out there. She's attending a conference. And Alice, I want to draw you into the conversation because I know you do a lot of training. What are some of the issues, Alice, that you're seeing that are not being anticipated, that they need to really turn to a professional that can help train them in some areas?
Well, and if we're talking about system specific, you know, and the technology that they're using, I find so many companies really just look at their loan origination system as a glorified way to track how many loans might be in process. I use the word might because, you know, they're working on percentages and really don't, sometimes some of them aren't even real good at just using phases and staging for the loans in their system. So, you know, I guess I'm curious on Loan Sister and some of the things that you guys have seen on, you know, how hard is it for a company to really make those transitions and fully manage their pipeline properly, you know, and make a transition into a better system. I've seen them take many, many months, if not, you know, a year and a half or more.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Alice, that you bring up a really good point. You know, these companies, especially the ones that have are used to doing it the broker way, I would like to call it, you know, and moving to that banker way of doing things, that transition can be very difficult. In fact, it's one of the main reasons that we really support the moving that in stages instead of just kind of moving it all at once, is because a lot of times it takes some time as far as training the staff and training even the bankers themselves, you know, the management of the company. So it does take time. They have to be aware of that going into that, but you're absolutely right.
Oh, I love that you brought up the managers, because I, you know, the staff is usually all eager to want to track things better at their level, and it's managers or owners who are, no, this is a report I use, and I know I have to take 30% of this number, and I have to rearrange this Excel table this way. You know, they don't want to leave what they know.
Right. Exactly. You know, you mentioned here briefly about, you know, building in that margin, and that's a lot of times what we get when we talk to a customer when they first come on as being a banker. They want to just build those margins and markups into the pricing, but what we're finding is that they need to look at the whole picture, not just specifically what's my profit going to look like, but how is that going to affect everything from my, you know, all the way through the entire process. You know, especially when they start doing hedging and things like that, they need to step back for a minute, take a look that everything they're doing is correct from an overall perspective.
And the reality is they don't have the knowledge. I mean, most of them are very good at originating loans. That's why they stayed as a broker for an originator as long as they have. And, you know, we keep coming back to this. I just published an article that's going to be out there in National Mortgage Professional, and it has to do with talking about the balance. It was talking about technology and quality control, compliance technology, and we featured Wetzel Trott, Alice. Thank you very much for helping us write that article. We featured you and talked a lot about you. But it goes back to the whole systems thing. A lot of the people are not aware of the interaction. They think they bought a accounting system. It's going to track all the things. They bought a loan origination or a pricing engine or what the technology you offer, and I want to get more into what you specifically offer, and they assume that they don't need to do anything more. The biggest mistake is a lot of people do not, they just think, we're going to tell my loan officers to build a half a point into the pricing and let them lock the loans. That is the worst thing you could be doing, folks. So, Ryan, let's go into it just briefly about what your technology does. I don't want to turn this into a full infomercial, but you guys do some things, and you do some very, very well. So tell us about it.
Well, Dave, you bring up a really good point. You know, and a lot of times when we're talking to a particular company, they're kind of used to, you know, walking in and hearing a sales presentation and walking away and purchasing something. And we take a very, very different approach at Loan Sifter. You know, there's a lot of times I can tell you that, well, at the end of the conversation, it could be that Loan Sifter may not be the right fit. And when we'll kind of direct them in the right direction, because we do service and try to really consult these individuals as much as we can. We team up with other companies and other technology partners to kind of make sure that what we're going to go after is going to work for them, because I promise you in about a week they'll figure out that either what you have told them is going to happen is either going to happen or it's not going to happen. And so we offer a range of products. A lot of our products we offer are tailored to a banker. You know, we have a centralized lock desk. We partner up with companies like DataTrack, which we already mentioned. But one of the big products too that we offer is e-originations, which is online originations. And so we're also able to capture that beginning stage of origination, especially with these bankers that are, their margins are tight and they're trying to figure out other ways to maximize those profits. Well, online originations is a perfect segment into everything else that they're doing. And so between our banker products and our online origination products, we feel like we have a pretty good suite of offering for bankers and emerging bankers specifically.
Well, and it's so important that people get over there. By the way, before we forget, it's a good point to say, what is your website?
www.loansifter.com. Pretty easy.
Loan Sifter, S-I-F-T-E-R.
You got it.
All right. Well, we get folks over there and listen to or look at what they have. And then, Ryan, we're going to keep you on. We're going to take a quick break. But if you could give us your contact information.
You bet. You know, you can just email me. It's really simple. It's ryan@loansifter.com, and you can reach out to me directly. I'll give you my phone number. It's 208-201-5769.
Stay on, Ryan. We're going to continue this dialogue. Folks, we've got Ryan from Loan Sifter as a special guest. We're talking about the complexities related to making the transition from broker to banker. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever. And Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Dave Lickin'. You know what? I want to make sure we got that ad spot in there with the Wetzel's Trot, one of our favorite partners in this topic, and the quality control, compliance, and all of that. Alice, we're seeing this as a major area that's overlooked. People say, you know what? And Andy and I use this comment all the time when we're talking to clients. You know, this isn't rocket science. I mean, after all, how difficult is it? Well, one of the areas that's most overlooked is quality control. Briefly, Alice, give us a quick couple points that what everyone listening to this program is going to need if they make this transition. What do they have to keep in mind when it comes to quality control? It's a requirement.
You have got to check your quality control plan to make sure that in your plan, it's covering you into this new aspect. So many people have purchased package plans as a broker. You've got to make sure you expand the plan to cover how you're going to quality control all your warehouse line, post-closing, insuring if it's FHA, you name it, that whole back-end process. Then you've got to make sure you implement the plan, and it cannot be haphazard. You've got to have full-fledged QC process, and including getting it done and having management responses. It's one of the number one things we see HUD write up lenders for, having inadequate plans and inadequate implementation of the plan.
Yeah, they stick it in a file and say, well, I got a plan. I said, yeah, but do you follow it? Do you use it? Are you responding to it? Well, I got the QC report. I stuck it in the folder. You know, folks, there's a thing called the management response, and you need to be plugged into that. I tell you, we're going to spend a whole lot more time on this topic, because there is a lot of folks really making serious transition or considering this as a serious transition. We encourage you to it. One of the things, we got some emails that rolled in here. I want to talk about this. Andy Shell, can you talk a little bit about the time it takes to make this transition? And just, we've got about 7 minutes left in the program, folks. I want to cover the timing. Andy, speak to the timing.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Well, real quickly, as it relates to technology, Ryan, you probably see this. I'm reminded, Dave just drove 1,500 miles up to see his family in Minnesota, and his kids now are young adult or mid-teens, so you probably didn't have this happen that much, but you hear kids on a road trip going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And I see this with technology deployment, and people need to understand, it's not like you walk in the room, turn on the light, and it's on. There are training issues, and there's literally integration issues with the systems and the host and the clouds and making everything work together. So real quick, Ryan, and then I'll circle back, and I want to talk a little bit more about the rest of the piece of becoming a banker. But what do you see as the timeline to get Loan Sifter up and running?
Yeah, and it's a great question. And it depends on the company. I mean, some companies are a little bit easier. Maybe it's a week. Other companies can take 3 weeks, maybe a little longer, depending upon the organization, the size of it, how complex it is. But you bring up a really good point, and that's something that we always tell our clients. You know, and we try to do a really good job at this, is make sure that the technology is going to meet your needs from an integration perspective. You know, there's a lot of different technologies out there, a lot of pieces that are trying to fit together. They all claim that they do a great job, but it's really important that you understand that not all technologies speak the same language, or at least speak it the same. And so make sure that that you ask that question, you know, how well does this integrate? You know, what are the talking points? You know, is this really going to do what I think it's going to do?
Yeah, well, I want to jump in just on that one point, Andy. I'm sorry for talking over you. The folks, do not try to make that decision on which technology. I mean, we get enamored. The worst person to sell is another salesman. A salesman selling a salesman. You buy and you usually like, you buy from who you like rather than what the right solution is. And I know, Andy, we do a lot of work in helping people select the right solution. I'm sorry, I wanted to get that point in. Andy, to your next point.
Oh, thanks, Dave. No problem at all. I just wanted to touch base a little bit on the broker-to-banker transition timeline, because Alice was just talking about you have to have a QC plan. You got to make sure your E&O is right and all the insurance fidelity is in place. You need to have an accounting system, and QuickBooks is great. We can customize it a little bit to make it more seamless, but there's some things you got to do on day one to make certain that you got everything in line, and then it's a transition, and it doesn't happen in necessarily 30 days or 60 days. And it depends on what does it mean to be a banker. Is it just closing in your name? Well, you could do that with a principal authorized agent, like Flagstar's got a good program and others. Or does it mean hedging, where you can close in your name, hedge your own pipeline, and sell to an investor like Wells? Or does it mean you're selling to Fannie Mae? I mean, some would define that until you can sell to Fannie Mae and create your own securities through Fannie Mae, you're not a banker. So the point of all that is it's a series of steps and progressions, and it doesn't happen on day one, and it doesn't even necessarily happen on day 90 or 180, but you can start closing loans in your name quickly through some of these programs. But once you close that loan, you now have an asset, and you have liabilities, and you have escrow funds you have to deal with. Don't underestimate the complexity of that first transition.
And I think it's important to say that's not to discourage you. You've got to make the transition. For many of you, you already recognize it. We've been saying it for a long time. Do not be discouraged. Make the transition. Step out there. We're so thrilled, Ryan, that you joined us to really kick off this discussion. We're going to be talking about this more in the months in the weeks ahead. We really appreciate you being on the program.
Well, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. We're going to have, as we do each week, we try to fit in talking about the news that didn't make the news. So, Rob Katz, give us a quick update on what we haven't talked about that we haven't had time to talk about. Rob, what did you notice this week?
Happy August, everyone. Thanks for another great show. I have two quick stories to point out to our listeners today. On Friday, National Mortgage News ran a story by Kate Berry, one of my favorite reporters, where she digs into the licensing mess faced by non-bank lenders. This mess shouldn't be news to any of our listeners, but even if you haven't been living under a rock, you should give it a read. I almost started crying when she pointed out that California has two separate agencies with different deadlines, July and December. At what point is everyone going to wake up and realize that they're making it impossible for lenders to do business? And remember when only a handful of lenders offered FHA loans, and now it's the norm? I read an article by Don Wotapka in the Wall Street Journal that talks about USDA's single-family housing guaranteed loan program getting a boost through legislation headed to the White House for approval. This program offers a no-money-down loan for low- and middle-income borrowers. Where have we heard that before? Is this going to be the next big wave of loans and then defaults? You can find more information on the Wall Street Journal blog. Well, those were the stories that caught my attention this past week. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
Rob, thank you so much. It's good to have Rob both as an individual and his company, Delmar Data Track, being with us and on the company, a part of the program. Thank you, Rob, so much for recording those comments for us each and every week. Folks, it's been so good to have you with us. We're going to be talking more about this in the weeks ahead. What should be your strategy as you look at all the financial regulations? I got a call from a client this last week while traveling. They said the same thing, Dave. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, folks, you can come to us each and every week. We'll be helping you digest and give you suggestions and things you should be considering. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. Tell your friends about it. We appreciate the fact that we have now had over 11,000 listeners to this program. It's growing, and it's growing virally thanks to many of you. Folks, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host,
David Lakin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.